will take you to nature, and you see that in life, if there is a man or a person who, say, eats a lot of food regularly, but he does not move. Can you imagine a person like that? Never moves. He's sleeping all the time, eating and sleeping, or staying up. What will happen to this person? This is not going to be a healthy life. He's not going to be able to live. And even if he lives, he'll be a sick man. The right way of living is to eat your food and then exercise your muscles and move around and work hard. And the harder you work, the more you are healthier. The healthier you are, you see. Now this is a basic principle of life, and exactly the same principle applies in the faith. There may be people who say, well, I will read the writings. And in fact, you may be a scholar. You may become a scholar of the faith. He reads everything. And he may be talking an awful lot as well. But he doesn't serve the faith. Doesn't do anything. That person is going to be unhealthy, going to be frustrating. The real way of life is to read the writings, to say your prayers, obligatory prayers, to live the life, to do all these things we have to do, but just as important, serve the cause of God. And the greatest service today to the cause of God is teaching. So you see now how there is a balance here, the balance comes into it. We are not going to be the people who are going to read and read and become carried away into the worlds of God or something like that. But we are going to do these things together. We're going to do this so that we can serve the faith. Although there are many things we can do to serve the faith, but I mentioned the greatest of all things in service to the faith is teaching. And I'll explain this to you later on, why this is that the greatest of all things is teaching. Now, serving the cause. Has been described to us from age to age, from time to time, by Baha'u'llah, by Abdul Baha, by Shoghi Effendi, and today by the House of Justice. Because every period of the faith, the time of the Bab, for instance, was a period of itself. The greatest of the work of the Babis then was to teach the faith. That was stood in forefront of all other activities. But there were other things they had to do, as well as teaching, which was specific to that particular age. For instance, if you were a Babi at the time of the Bab, you had to teach the faith, but you also had to learn how to ride a horse. Really. And to hold your sword, for instance. This was how it was done. It was a special requirement of that age. Then when Baha'u'llah came, again teaching was in the forefront of all the activities. But then Baha'u'llah said, now is the time never to use your sword, but to give your life. And that was a period of great stories of great heroism and martyrdoms during that period of Baha'u'llah and steadfastness. And then Abdul Baha's period, you could say, again teaching was in the forefront. But he said, now is the time to remain steadfast in the covenant. There was a time that Abdul Baha, so much, the cause was attacked, you know, at that time, during the ministry of Abdul Baha, by the enemies from within. These are the covenant breakers. They attacked the faith with such fierceness that if it wasn't for the fact that, as I was mentioning yesterday, the cause of God, the machinery, the covenant was so strong, and with the help of some heroes of the faith, a few who rallied around Abdul Baha like lions and protected the faith, today the faith would have been broken up. But it was because the machinery of the covenant was so strong, they couldn't do it. But during the period of Abdul Baha, The emphasis was on the steadfastness in the covenant. Abdu'l-Bahá used to send teachers all over the world to help the friends to remain steadfast in the covenant. We may not have the time to deal with this subject of the covenant. Of course, we can't deal with everything. But now, that was a special period again. But again, teaching stood in forefront. Now, since then, Shoghi Effendi's ministry, and today, the beginning of the formative age, again, teaching the cause is in the forefront. But the specific task of today is the building of the institutions of the faith. Now, you cannot live in this age and do the things which belong to the other ages. You can't say, well, I'm a Baha'i, but I'm going to now learn how to ride a horse and hold a sword in my hand, as the early believers used to do. This would be out of place. But you cannot also, if you are going to be devotedly follow the teachings, we cannot stay away from building the institutions of the faith. This is our task. But teaching and building the institutions of the faith are the two major tasks that the Baha'is of this particular period are faced with. Now, I want to talk a little bit about teaching, which is really, Baha'u'llah says, the most meritorious of all things in the sight of God. It is not just one of the most meritorious. He says it's the most meritorious of all things in the sight of God. Now, why is it? And first of all, I want to mention that there is a great, in my view, there is a great misunderstanding in the Baha'i communities about the purpose of teaching. Often people think that we teach the faith so that we may increase our numbers. This is not the main purpose of teaching. This is not the primary purpose of teaching, although other religions do that probably for this reason. But we must not be under this impression that the main purpose of teaching, I'm saying the main purpose of teaching, is not to increase our numbers. This is a secondary purpose. This will come as a result. The result of teaching is that our numbers will increase. But there is a far, far greater reason for teaching the faith. Teaching is an act of devotion to God. It's an act of devotion. Now, I will explain this to you in this way. Again, we go to nature and look at nature to see what teaching is in nature. In nature, you will find always any object which depends upon upon its life giver, any object which depends upon its life giver. You know, there is a life giver. For instance, this earth is a life giver. This earth is the mother earth, isn't it? It is this earth which has created everything. Everything which you see on this earth has come about from this earth, this earth. So it's like the mother earth. We all are dependent upon this earth for our livelihood, for our existence. So we are dependent upon it. Now, what happens is this: whenever such a thing exists, that this is the source of your life, the source of your existence, then all things will be drawn to it. Everything will be attracted to it. Every object, as you can see, is attracted to this earth. Do you notice that? Every object which comes within its gravitational pull is attracted to this earth. This is a love relationship. There is a love between the creator and this and all the other things. This earth is like the creator. Is the creator of all, is the source of life. And so every object which comes within its gravitational pull is attracted to it, just with the force of attraction, which is love. See? This is the law of nature. But, and therefore, the home of every object is to come down and to rest on this earth. When it rests on this earth, then you can say it has reached its destiny. It has reached its home. For instance, you see this pen in my hand. Its real place, the real place for this pen is to come down, to be attracted by this love relationship, to be attracted, and eventually rests on this earth. When it reaches on this earth, the lover and the beloved have reached to each other. You see? the lover and the beloved have reached to each other. And this is a stage of fulfillment, a stage of pleasure. Pleasure for both. The word pleasure really is in here, you can use it. It's a stage of fulfillment. Now this is a physical thing we are talking about. But as long as my hand is in here, you see my hand here, this hand becomes a barrier for this pen to come down and reach its beloved and rests on this earth. Although the force of attraction still exists, there is a force of attraction already, even at this time, with my hand in the way, the earth is still want to draw this to itself, but my hand is preventing it. And this pencil now is a state of deprivation, because its home is not here. Its home is to come down and be joined with its beloved. Is that clear? This is a principle of life. Exactly the same thing applies between God and man. Exactly. God is the creator of all. And again, as I was mentioning yesterday, we are not talking of the essence of God. Let us not talk of the essence of God, because we said yesterday clearly, there is no relationship between the essence of God and man. It cannot be with anything. There's no relationship whatsoever. But this is God revealed to man. There is a love relationship between the two. God loves to draw a soul to itself just as much as this earth loves to draw this pencil to itself. But men have many barriers in between. Many barriers. We all have barriers. Barriers of veils and barriers. Barriers of, for instance, prejudice is a barrier. It prevents people from recognizing and coming down and becoming united and becoming attracted to their Lord, to their God. Tradition is another barrier. People are born in a tradition and die in the same tradition. It's like being born in a prison and never see outside the prison, and then you die in the same prison. This is what most people are like today, tradition. Maybe in this country you don't have so much attachment to tradition, but there are countries in the world that I'm more familiar with where tradition plays a tremendous role. You don't do anything except what is tradition. There are other barriers. Pride is a barrier. Many barriers. Pride. You become proud of yourself and your accomplishments and your knowledge and your accomplishments. This is a barrier. Knowledge could become a barrier. Again, because it gives birth to pride. So you see, all people in the world, their soul, there is a force of attraction between them and God. Always God wants to draw them. And that force of attraction is there, but these barriers prevent them from coming and becoming united with their God. Now, the act of teaching, which only a Baha'i can do, is to remove these barriers one by one. And when the barriers are removed, what happens? All the barriers are removed, the soul is attracted to God. And he says, I believe. That moment when he says, I believe, as we were talking about it yesterday, you know, the spirit of faith being born, is when the lover and the beloved reach each other. And this is a state of pleasure. Pleasure. Pleasure for God and pleasure for the soul. Because man and God are the opposite things. And in this life, when two opposites are reaching each other, this is a state of pleasure. It's like the North Pole and the South Pole of a magnet. They're attracted. So you see what teaching is? When you teach the faith, you bring pleasure to God. It's the most meritorious of all things. It's an act of devotion to God, because you bring a soul to its God. This is the purpose of teaching. This is the main purpose of teaching. Well, of course, as a result of it, our numbers will increase. That is secondary. Then We can build the institutions of the faith. We can. But therefore, teaching, friends, is a very, it's a spiritual act. It is not just something I'm going to teach the faith because the NSA tells me to do it, or because the counselors tell me to do it, or because the House of Justice tells me to do it. But teaching is an essential part of the life of a Baha'i. And it is something that we all will have to be engaged in. There is no question of anybody becoming, if anybody does not teach the faith, well, you'll have to think about it yourself. It's like a person who eats the food, he reads the writings, he may know a lot about the faith, he says his prayers, but he is not serving the faith. Well, you remember I was telling you about this man who eats his food and he doesn't do anything, what happens to him? Well, this will happen. We will not be excited, we will not be able to do anything in life. Teaching is not something that anybody can say, I am too busy for it, really. Except in certain exceptional cases. Very, very rarely you come across exceptional cases. There are, of course, places now that people are prevented from teaching. For instance, if you are living in the Holy Land, you don't teach the faith. But in this day and in these, and all over the world, really, teaching is the most important aspect of our life. If we look upon the writings, we find that Baha'u'llah has enjoined on all to teach. I will tell you, our daily life often prevents us from really getting engaged in teaching the cause. Because we are so busy in our life, so busy, we have to do so many things. Even we have to do so many things for the faith that we have not time to teach the faith. And I think this is a very wrong way of approaching it. In fact, I remember some years ago, one of the National Assemblies told us in Europe that we had appointed one of the believers who was a marvelous teacher to become a board member, auxiliary board member. We appointed him as an auxiliary board member. And after a few months, the National Assembly wrote to us and said, what have you done? You have made him an auxiliary board member. He was one of our best teachers. And now he doesn't teach the faith. Can you imagine? This is very wrong. In fact, one of the first things we say to our auxiliary board members all over now, at least, I always advise them, if you want to do anything, you must be teaching the faith yourself. It's no excuse because I'm a very busy man and I must not teach the faith. Teaching the faith is for everyone. We found in our home that we're very busy, and myself and my wife, but we have to teach the faith. No matter how busy you are, you have to teach the faith. You cannot have an exception. There's no exception. This is the most important function of a Baha'i. And teaching is a personal thing. Unfortunately, things are done in the Western world very impersonally. And we have got used to the idea of teaching in an impersonal way, which will never be right. You have to teach on a personal level. We do most things in life impersonally. Have you noticed that? I don't know what life is like here. I'm not familiar with America. But I know in Europe, if you want to do anything, you won't put your name down for it. You give a box number in the newspaper so that nobody will recognize you. You know, it's impersonal. You don't say anything you want to do. You put a notice in the newspapers. You want to sell something. You want to buy something. You want to see somebody. You put a box number. Even when you want to fight with somebody, you don't fight him directly. You employ a solicitor, a lawyer, to fight for you. You see, everything is done impersonally here. But teaching has to be done personally. You have to come in contact with the soul. You have to love him. You have to then look into his eyes and love him with your heart until such time that you think he's now and then learn a lot about him to see what he believes in. And then comes a time that you can say a little bit.